You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, my big thanks to my co-host this entire afternoon, Matt Rothschild. He's got that fine podcast, Wisconsin Forward. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts, but of course at civicmedia.us. We have been talking about with you, with each other, trying to process what in the hell has been going on? The deployment, the idea that active duty military, not just National Guards men and women, but active duty military are being moved, stationed into Los Angeles, Marines, potentially over a battalion's worth. That's 700 plus Marines to respond to protesters. Wow. And all of this in part being, of course, incited by the Trump administration, this escalation intentional, I think one could argue, as massive protests mobilize across the country in response to mass deportation and immigration raids. Not as Donald Trump promised, we're going to go get the bad guys and the murderers and the people that are destroying property and are really striking hearts, fear into the hearts of regular Americans. No, they're not picking up the murderers and the bad guys. They're picking up grandmas and people that have been working here for 25 years and their kids. And that's what's going on. Thousands of protests. And specifically on Friday, the leader of SEIU in California, a gentleman by the name of David Huerta, was apparently like beaten down by federal law enforcement. And he has been in custody ever since. So, again, everything seeming to be escalating thanks to the Trump administration. But all of this exists in the larger context of U.S. immigration law. And I think most of us generally understand things aren't working particularly well lately, but we may not know why exactly that is. So Matt and I are extremely grateful to be joined by just the person to help us understand that, Erin Murphy Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Erin, thanks so much for making time and helping us all understand what's going on.
Thanks so much for having me, and I hope I can help us understand what's going on.
Well, we'll give it a good college try, I guess, pun or law school try, right, together. Let me just start very seriously, just like Matt and I, just like all of our listeners watching the news over the weekend, extraordinarily shocking developments. Your reactions on the deployment of the National Guard troops, on this seeming escalation of conflict between the administration and those that disagree with its policies.
Right. I mean, it is shocking, but I can't say I'm not surprised. It seems to be part of a scheme of this administration to certainly invoke drama and bring a highlight to people that are in opposition to ICE and some of the more extremely aggressive tactics that they're doing within our communities. And I think, you know, general population is not prepared to see people being ripped from their homes or from their children. And that's what's starting to happen. And also the power of the state versus the federal government, we're seeing that happen as well. And I can't say we were surprised that that would happen between, you know, President Trump and the governor of California.
Yeah, it seems that he is quite eager when it comes to, quote, blue states or blue cities. Let me start with this term, Erin, because it gets bandied about a bunch, and no one knows what it means, if anything, in particular. And that is the term sanctuary cities. Is there such a thing as defined in federal law or state law somewhere? Because I've looked, and I can't find a legal definition anywhere for that.
No, Maggie, you're correct. There is no legal definition of what a sanctuary city is. And certain cities may have, you know, sanctuary policies. Madison often is described as, where I live, a place where there are sanctuary policies, but not necessarily a sanctuary city. But then you look at, you know, LA, California, a lot of the bigger liberal cities will find themselves categorized as sanctuary cities and then targeted by certain people or found to be more safe by certain people. But it's often describing the amount of compliance that local law enforcement will have with Immigration Customs Enforcement, you know, the immigration police. And certain places in Wisconsin have very strong bonds and strong 287G agreements where they work directly together. Madison doesn't have that, but there's a number of places that do have that in Wisconsin. So 287G is defined in the Immigration and Nationality Act, but what a sanctuary city is, it depends on what the person, how they interpret it.
Well, and at a very high level, and then Matt, I'll ask you to jump in if you've got questions. At a very high level, one of the things that I try to point out to folks with some degree of regularity is that it used to be a sort of battle cry of conservatives, that states' rights, and this reliance on the 10th Amendment. And one of the things that people have to keep in mind here, aside from the fact that states' rights was simply a dog whistle to all sorts of Jim Crow-style racist, oppressive regimes, was that at the root of it, the idea of the 10th Amendment was that federal government could not effectively take over the apparatuses of state and local government for the purposes of executing federal law. Well, immigration law is federal law. And so if an immigration official says to a local law enforcement official, I don't know, say like a sheriff, and says, you must keep Juan Ramos or Jane Smith or whomever the heck it is in custody until I can get there and figure out if this is someone who's there illegally, that is not permitted under our constitutional order. They cannot compel local law enforcement to hold on to people longer than the state law or state constitutional basis allows for their detainer. Am I getting that mostly right, Erin?
No, I think you're getting it all right based on what my, you know, my experience is, my understanding is. And I think when you look at that, you know, 48-hour ICE detainer and whether local officials, sheriff's offices are willing to hold someone past that, we've seen a number of conservative sheriffs say, I cannot do that. It is against the law and I'm not going to break the law. So there's a lot of misinformation, I think, that the public is understanding or not understanding in these situations.
Professor Barbato, you're director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. And so you give advice to law students and to clients, I imagine, about how to handle immigration proceedings. It's getting really dicey right now. So I'm just wondering, what advice are you giving to clients or students who are dealing with clients when these clients have an appointment with ICE on their citizenship status? Because some of those folks are getting grabbed by ICE when they walk into the courtroom door. So doesn't that make your job difficult? And how do you counsel people?
You know, it has made my job has always been difficult. Immigration lawyering has never been easy. Teaching law students how to practice immigration or about immigration has never been easy. But practicing it right now, I do worry more than ever about not just our clients or the people we're serving, but about the safety of my students and their mental health as well. We're seeing families torn apart even beyond what we saw under the zero tolerance policy. You know, just today we're talking to a family, a father is going to be deported. 5 U.S. citizen children are going to be left here without their father, but mostly without financial support. You know, and how do I explain that there's nothing else we can do, right? That's really hard. But in terms of preparing for, a lot of people we represent are actually in detention. So in the Dodge County Detention Center, they have to show up for court. That's where they are. They're not going to be placed in a more dangerous position because of that. But now that people are being arrested in immigration court and also criminal courts, we really have to be prepared for the idea that they may not be coming out of them. So we're preparing them for the deportation. How is your family going to survive without your mom? Where are these children going to go? Are you going to take the children with you? You know, a re-entry process. It's changed substantially in such a short amount of time that we're not necessarily prepared to do it, but we're doing our best to provide some sort of access to justice and some sort of due process.
Those must be heartbreaking conversations to have with clients, though.
It's beyond. And I've been doing this for 20 years. This is not easy. It's especially not easy telling someone who's gotten to know a client so well that they're going to be deported without being able to access the benefits or the relief that they may be eligible for, but that doesn't mean we'll give up on them. It just means we may be representing them while they're in another country.
Can you, this is what I wanted to get to. I did a substantial amount of pro bono asylum work when I was a young baby lawyer. Boy, is that complicated. And I was hoping that you could explain to people as a threshold matter, and we may need to bridge into the next segment, and we will. What's someone who may be eligible for asylum versus someone granted asylum? Are there different types of asylum? What does it mean to be a refugee? Is that a different thing? And what happens if someone comes here illegally? Is there any way to get themselves back into legal resident status, or how is that supposed to work?
So I will try to explain this, but this takes me like a semester to explain to
you. Just boil it down in about, give or take 2 minutes, Erin.
We'll see how good I am at teaching this. But the first thing I would explain is the difference between a refugee and asylee. So someone who enters the United States as a refugee, which is on pause right now, they have been defined as a refugee and found to be a refugee by the United Nations. And once the United Nations finds that, then they look for a country to house them. So a refugee is someone who has a fear of persecution or has been persecuted in their home country based on their race, nationality, membership in a particular social group, religion, or
gender, probably.
That falls into a particular social group. And that's what a lot of, someone who's transgender who can't return to their home country, or someone, if they're a member of a family that is persecuted by the government, something like that. But someone who's seeking asylum needs to prove that in the United States. And so when we look at, I do a lot of work across the Americas and the route that people take to get to the southern border, people are coming to the southern border because they can't get refugee status in the Americas outside of the US. I don't know if that makes sense. So the southern border has become this hotspot for people seeking refuge. And they have to prove that in our system, whether it's through to an immigration judge or an asylum officer with U.S. Department of Homeland Security. But one of the major reasons why our southern border has become a hotspot is because the only place people can apply for it.
Because the United States is one of the only nations where you can apply for asylum.
Right.
Is it
you can apply in other countries, but we don't have United Nations processing people in the Americas. So they can't stay in their home country or a neighboring country and then come to the U.S. They have to get to the border of the U.S. or inside at an airport, a port of entry.
Understood. Folks, we've got Erin Murphy Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. We're talking about the different types of status in this country and how challenging it is to get your case heard, to provide the requisite proof if you are trying to make an asylum claim, and what to do if you're here already illegally. There's so much to get through. She's going to stick around. So is Matt Rothschild, my excellent co-host. This two-hour show, an edition of the Maggie Dawn Show. So keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. More in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a fine guest with us this half hour. Her name is Erin Barbato. She is the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. We were talking about the fact that the United States and our system is somewhat unique in that people can arrive here. They need to be here to request asylum here unless they are otherwise designated as a refugee by the United Nations, which program is paused regardless under Trump's, I think, one of his first executive orders, except, of course, if you're a white Afrikaner from South Africa, which that's a topic for an entirely different day. And I know how damnedly hard it is to put forward an asylum claim. I worked on approximately 4 different cases. Wow. And if I'll describe it briefly, and if you could help fill in some of the details. And then I wanted to get to, what does someone do if they're here already without legal permission? Mm-hmm. But just in brief, Asylum cases can be brought on a variety of bases. You're being persecuted, or your life is at threat because of your gender, your family, you're getting extorted, all kinds. There's a huge gamut. One of the challenges is that in certain countries, if you are trying to get the documentation to both prove your client's identity and prove the imminent threat to their life, especially if it's due to another government's action, gee whiz, hello, government of Myanmar, please send me a notarized statement that you're going to kill my client because of their that document doesn't exist. Right. Can you just share a little bit and flesh out for people better than I could based on my now 20-year-old memories of these cases, how challenging those asylum cases are to prove up and bring, and how time-consuming?
Yeah, I mean, they are extremely challenging. I think the one of the biggest misconceptions is that, you know, in criminal court, when someone is charged with a crime, they're going to have a lawyer that's paid for by our government. In immigration proceedings, when someone is facing deportation, they can have a lawyer, but only if they can pay for one or find a pro bono one. In Wisconsin, we are an immigration lawyer desert, especially for pro bono services. So people being able to find an attorney to help them present their case to an immigration judge when our government is trying to deport you with a very trained immigration officer, a lawyer who works for ICE, it's incredibly difficult. You're 5 times more likely to be successful in applying for asylum if you have a lawyer in court with you, right? And so that's what we try to do. We cannot fill the void, but we represent certain individuals who are facing deportation. But we do have to do the amount of hours we put in and resources to find the evidence that we need to support the claim to meet our burden is incredibly difficult. The asylum laws do allow someone to receive asylum if it's just based on their testimony, if they're credible. And so sometimes we just have their testimony, but we hire an expert, but that costs money, right? And we have to find an expert. We may be able to call a witness, but that witness may be in Guatemala and they don't speak English. So it's incredibly difficult to practice in this area, especially when the stakes are so high, there are not enough people able to represent individuals seeking asylum, and when your client could be facing certain death or persecution if you don't succeed in immigration court.
Professor Barbato, I want to get back to an anecdote that you started to tell, and I think I interrupted you, that might bring home, you know, the human cost here and just the tragic story. You mentioned a father who has several kids, I think 5 kids. I can't remember what you said. Tell us that story, what's happening to that family, and make it real for folks who are listening who may not follow every little legal nuance, but can
grab hold of this. Yeah, every case is nuanced, right? But there are two cases specifically of fathers who had prior deportation orders in the past week that are going to be deported. The deportation orders were not because of they had criminal records or anything like that. They failed to show up at immigration court in the past, which is not something that they should have done, right? They should have gone. But now under the administration and their enforcement priorities, they've been arrested by ICE and they're in deportation proceedings, they're in detention, and they're gonna be deported because we would need a year or so to build a case and potentially fight it, and it would take all of our resources. But one father is leaving behind 5 U.S. citizen children, and one is leaving behind 4 U.S. citizen children. And the moms rely on the income of the father that's leaving. And so it's just something new. This isn't new, but it's more pronounced, and we're going to see it throughout our communities. And the people that are going to suffer the most are U.S. citizen children.
And how old are these kids?
They range from 1-year-old to 16.
What a disaster.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Aaron, if someone's here without legal permission, what are their options?
You know, if someone enters the United States without authorization, there's not going to be many options for them. If they want to apply for asylum, you have to do so within the first year of being in the U.S. There are some exceptions for something called Convention Against Torture. But a lot of people enter the United States unless they have a close family member, like marry a U.S. citizen. They're probably not going to have a pathway to citizenship without being a victim of a very serious crime. And even if you're married to a U.S. citizen, it often requires you to leave the country. And be there for potentially 10 years. And that's just not an option for most families. So, you know, people say, get in line, do whatever you do to do it right. There's not really a way to do it right for most people.
There's not really a way to do it right for most people. And that is the problem. We have a broken system that's not right. serving us. It's not serving people who want to be here legally. You will be back, I hope, Professor Barbato, to continue to discuss this important topic. Thank you so much to Aaron Murphy Barbato, Director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Please keep up the good work. My thanks to each and every one of you and all of the students there. Tell them people do care and appreciate what they're doing. We'll be back with Matt on the other side. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. That break that they couldn't contain themselves. If you want to see the secret show behind the show, listen to all of our banter in the breaks. You're going to want to watch us on Civic Media's YouTube channel. You could also watch at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, X, Facebook. I'm forgetting. I'm also on YouTube, on Blue Sky at Maggie Dawn Show. And if you really want to see me spout off on some things, you can check out my LinkedIn, Margaret Dawn, you know, because that's my professional name. Let's pick up right where we left off. We were talking about, and again, big, big thanks to our last special guest, Aaron Barbato, Director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Aaron said two things that Matt, as a non-lawyer, which is incredibly helpful on this show, really struck him. One, in Wisconsin, we live in an immigration attorney desert. And the second point that really resonated with Matt is that absent some really extraordinary circumstances and exceptions, if a person is here illegally, there's basically no pathway. There's almost nothing that can be done to get themselves on the right side of their legal citizenship. You're basically screwed. And Matt, we were talking about the challenges of folks trying to be immigration lawyers. One, you have to take, and I don't know this because I practiced in a profit-making capacity, but I had the good fortune to work at a law firm that permitted us to do a lot of pro bono work. And I did a number of asylum cases. And they were very difficult, extremely time-consuming, and took years. And it's very hard for lawyers that practice in immigration to make a living. The stakes are high. It's emotionally draining for them and their clients. But that area of the law is also rife for abuse. You often have clients that don't know how to navigate the systems. They may not speak English. And if you blow your client's case terribly, they're just gone. So it's a perfect storm for abuse, and frankly, the fact that there aren't more immigration lawyers is a massive problem.
Yeah, and Maggie, we were also talking during the break about what a bind the immigration lawyer is in right now, because does that if I'm an undocumented immigrant and I've got an appointment at ICE in Milwaukee tomorrow, I'm going to ask my lawyer, should I go? Even go? Should I show up? Because if I do, I might get grabbed and sent away, and break up my family. And yet, you said the lawyer cannot tell them not to go because the lawyer has an obligation to say you got to follow the law. That's a tough position for the lawyer and the client to be in.
Yeah, there's a lot of those situations that are occurring. Lawyers, when they're doing their job correctly, do not advise clients to break the law. That is not a lawyer operating in good faith. It is a lawyer's job to advise clients of the relative legal risk and other risks that they may face under different scenarios. But a lawyer is never permitted to advise their client to break the law. As we state that cleanly and in those stark of terms, this is a terrible situation that our country is in. And I'm going to put a huge portion of the responsibility for this quagmire, this crisis that we face, at the hands of Congress. And when I talk about Congress being ineffectual, I'm going to look dead at gerrymandering, dead at the Supreme Court that has permitted gerrymandering in such an extreme that it has rendered Congress for many terms to be almost ineffectual. the more gerrymandered a district is, the less incentive there is for a congressperson to get anything done, because an extreme partisan gerrymandering basically walks a seat in permanently. And so if you're not running in competitive races, you're not going to be very responsive to your constituents or your district. And over time, what you see then is an unwillingness to grapple with the most challenging public policy questions of our time, because you get punished if you get it wrong, or you get punished if you seek compromise when your party's leadership is urging you to never seek compromise, to break it all, right? And again, so I look towards the MAGA regime and the precursors thereof for the dysfunction in the immigration system. We need, you know, immigration judges at an exponentially increased clip. We need
the Biden administration almost made that happen until Trump sabotaged it.
Yes. So I look at the MAGA regime, I look at Donald Trump, and I look at Congress and those that have defended extreme partisan gerrymanders as the architects of this crisis. That's it. That's where the responsibility lies. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. If you are in the Elkhorn area, if you are at the No More Raids, No More Kidnappings protest that kicked off at 5 p.m. on the corner of Wisconsin and Walworth Streets in Elkhorn, you want to give us an on-the-ground view of that, give us a call or a text, 855-752, 855-75-CIVIC. Other updates in breaking news this hour, California union leader, which helped his, I shouldn't say helped, his arrest by federal law enforcement on Friday at an ICE protest, in part, I think, led to the escalation. He has been released from federal custody on a $50,000 bond. Again, he was arrested during an ICE raid in Los Angeles. He is a citizen. He is a father. And again, he is a citizen. Other breaking, head-scratching news, Israel diverts an aid boat carrying Greta Thunberg, who in a video says she's been, quote, kidnapped. We're trying to find out exactly what's going on there. Again, this is Greta Thunberg, environmental activist, apparently has been diverted in a boat by Israel. We will share more when it's available.
I saw a little video of that.
What is even going on?
This was a humanitarian aid to Gaza that Greta Thunberg was on, and Israel raided the and blocked the boat from going in, and I guess now has arrested folks on the boat.
Unbelievable. Let's go to the phone lines, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Chad from Greenfield, you've been very patient. Thank you. Say hello to Matt. What you got for us?
Hey, sorry if I'm a little tired. I haven't been able to sleep for the past 10 days, ever since Cory Booker gave that Nazi salute. I couldn't believe he did such a terrible thing like that. It makes me shake and tremble. But
what Nazi salute are you talking about by Cory Booker? I hadn't really put Cory Booker in the Nazi saluter camp. What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, it looked exactly what Elon Musk did in your side, so that's a Nazi salute. So I'm just going off your stuff. But the reason...
Wait. I'm sorry. Let's just stick here for a minute, Chad, if we will. You started out accusing the minority leader in the House of Representatives of a Nazi salute. Mm. Why do you say that? What are you referring to? What event? Well, because that's not what happened, as I understand things.
Oh, I saw it. If you didn't see the video, it's very clear. If you do it, there's plenty of side-by-sides on Twitter, and it's exactly the same motion Elon Musk did. And from what I learned from your side, that's a Nazi salute, so I'm just going on consistency. I don't think it is, but I'm just going off what you guys say. But I'm going to fire...
Wait.
Whatever.
I mean, Chad.
No, whatever. It doesn't work for your narrative.
Wait a minute. You brought it up. I'm asking you a follow-up question about this.
Sure.
You're trying to say my side. Let's be clear, Chad. You're not on the side of Nazis. You don't think Nazi salutes are good, do you?
Oh, no, and I don't think they're good at all, and that's why I'm so disappointed he did it. But I'm just going based on...
Would you then, if you're disappointed in Cory Booker, you're alleging, again, that he did some kind of Nazi salute, then you would equally slam Elon Musk for same, correct?
Well, I didn't think it was a Nazi until you guys said it was. So I'm just going off what you guys say. Chad, it doesn't work though.
Do you and I agree that if someone does a salute or some hand gesture that can reasonably be interpreted as a Nazi salute, and it is deeply offensive to people of all backgrounds, but especially Jewish folks, that's not good, right?
Yeah, you're proving my point, because Cory Booker did the same thing Elon Musk did. So you're
I haven't looked at what Cory Booker did. I will certainly give it a read. But what I'm asking you is, I think it is a reasonable visual interpretation of what Elon Musk did, that that was a Nazi salute. Do you think that is a reasonable interpretation, given what he did not once but twice? The manner in which his facial expression.
I would like to talk about David Herta, but I will answer your question. I will answer it. I did not think Elon Musk did do a Nazi salute until everyone said he did, and then Cory Booker did the same thing. I challenge you.
Chad, I get your point. I'm just asking you to be similarly accountable. If you're saying Cory Booker should be condemned for doing a Nazi salute, and I don't think any of Cory Booker's past, he's never tweeted something anti-Semitical to the best.
Neither has Elon.
Yes, he has, Chad. That's Elon. Just simply.
He's tweeted.
He supports the far-right neo-Nazi party in Germany. What are you talking
about? Chad, he appeared via video link at the party rally, the national party rally, for a political party in Germany that is associated with the Nazi alt-right in Germany. So yes, Elon Musk had a very specific, well-documented history of embracing neo-Nazi, alt-right, and anti-Jewish imagery. So that was part of the context when we looked at what Elon Musk did at that rally. Cory Booker, on the other hand, doesn't have that history. But if you want to go on imagery alone, all I'm asking you to do, Chad, to have any validity to what you're saying, is if you think what Cory Booker did was bad, please, right now, I'm giving you an opportunity, Chad from Greenfield, condemn what Elon Musk did.
Oh, I am condemning it because I...
Woo, we got to a point of agreement with Chad. That's amazing. Whew, it only took 5 minutes. Chad from Merrimack, you're up next. What do you got for us? Say hello to Matt.
Hello, Matt. So what do you call it when a masked person comes into your home or your place of business or your church or your school and grabs you without any kind of legal background or reasonable cause, pulls you out, takes you away in an unmarked vehicle, and... puts you into a foreign country? Because if that happened, for example, with, say, an Israeli citizen in Israel, they'd call it terrorism.
Yeah, yeah.
Or when it happened in Pinochet's Chile, they called it disappearing, kidnapping and disappearing people. And that's, where we're at here. We have people in our country who are being disappeared, essentially.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate that. Ollie from the Northwoods, you're up. Say hi to Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Ollie.
I just have something to say that it seems like people are giving him, Trump, an excuse, saying that he's trying to sow chaos and stuff, but.
I'm just going to jump in, Ollie. We got limited time left. I'm not providing Donald Trump an excuse. Sowing chaos, inciting increasing levels of violence so that Donald Trump can exert control over the military and set up literally what history tells us is the necessary predicate to a dictatorship, that is, control of a large portion of the military. That's what's going on. It ain't an excuse. It ain't a reason. It's just damnedly scary and is one of the indicators that we are through the looking glass when it comes to protecting our democracy. This conversation continues.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, tomorrow I'm going to be a guest bartender at a charity event. So I'm really excited and thankful that my current guest co-host, Matt Rothschild, is going to be here with all of you alongside Angela Lang and Dan Schaefer. You will be in fine hands, six of them indeed, for tomorrow's conversation. I'll be back on Wednesday. But Matt, guess who's back on the line, wants to argue some more. Hey, Chad, I see you called back. I just watched the Cory Booker video. They're not at all similar. Like, not at all, and you know that.
I don't know how they aren't, but that's a different issue. I wanted to ask you about
that
Dan Hair
thing. Chad. One is a clear expression of heartfelt togetherness. The other one has an angry billionaire-like boy with an angry face ripping off what is clearly a salute style. The other one's like a half wave. You don't see the difference between the two.
No, it sounds convenient.
Would you put your hand on a Bible? Do you believe in God, Chad? Would you put your hand on the Bible and swear to that? You would.
Oh, in a heartbeat. I'll do it.
Tell me right now. I swear to God that I believe those two things are exactly the same. Tell me, Chad. I swear to God, I believe these two things are exactly the same. Do it.
Sure,
do it on live radio, Chad. Come on.
Are you gonna let me speak or no?
I'm gonna let you swear to God that those two things are the same.
I swear to God that those two things look pretty darn similar to me.
And God help save Chad's soul, his immortal soul. My goodness.
And also, let's remember what Elon Musk said after the controversy raged. He said, "I bet you did not see that coming." Nazi, N-A-Z-I.
Yeah.
So, here's a little adolescent fool who
owning the libs.
Holocaust imagery, Elon Musk, and Chad can't even admit that.
It's different.
You know, Elon Musk is in allegiance with neo-Nazis in Germany.
Just watch the tape from the AFD meeting. That's all I got to say. And from Chippewa Falls, say hello to Matt. What do you have for us this afternoon?
I guess we can all agree on one thing with Chad, is that Donald Trump has done a great job of dividing us. And I'm very fearful, and the rest of the country should be. I was in the service and in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was friends with a lot of different people. And one black man said to me, young man, he said, "Our next war will be a race war." And I just thought, well, no, that's never going to happen. Well, here we are. And what we're doing to other people, this is scary business, guys. So all those people that want to argue about Musk and Trump and Biden and all that, let's get serious here, guys. This is about our freedom. Anything you do against Trump, you will be arrested.
And it may be Trump today, but maybe it's the guy you disagree with or the gal you disagree with tomorrow, Chad, right? Like, the picture is bigger, and it's actually as much Chad's rights as it is anybody else's rights that those protesters are taken to the streets in defense of. This sort of oligarchical billionaire boys in charge, suppressing the vote, suppressing disagreement, that isn't good for anybody. There seems to be this delusion that has gripped the MAGA regime and its supporters that it's just fine to trample all over our most closely and shared held values because it's my guy, because we're winning. But that's just the con, right? That's the bit. That's the thing that they want people, God bless him, Chad, and good luck with your immortal soul. That's what they want us to do, right? Think of this in terms of black and white or urban and rural. The reality is we all, us regular people, us 90%ers, we have so much more in common with one another than anything that divides us, no matter what Donald Trump and the MAGA regime is trying to tell you this. Here are the things that we have in common right now. We're facing an average tariff rate of nearly 22%. That's the highest since 1909. We are facing each of our households at least $5,000 to our annual grocery bills, courtesy of Donald Trump. We are facing the lowest levels of consumer confidence in our economy for the last 4 years, thanks to Donald Trump. 25, now 50% steel tariffs are going to make houses more expensive. Schooling ain't getting any cheaper. Childcare ain't getting any cheaper, right? None of the things that we all need to work better is any of this happening. And if you happen to be a law enforcement and national security hawk, guess what all these thousands of troops aren't doing? Guess what the thousands of other federal law enforcement that have been pulled off of their important work dealing with drug trafficking or other national security issues are doing now that they're rounding up neighbors and friends who have worked here for decades and paid taxes, right? They're not doing the core work that our nation needs to protect it from our actual enemies, both foreign and domestic. It is a distraction to think it is us and them. The only us and them here are those of us in the 90% versus the billionaire boy oligarchs. That's what's going on. Money ain't speech. Corporations aren't people. And if you don't believe me, $51 trillion, that's the amount of money that has gone from the bottom 90% to the top 1% since 1981. That system ain't working. Everything else is a distraction. Matt, I'm going to give you the last thoughts on the day. We got about a minute.
Well, I just want everyone to oppose these steps toward martial law that we're seeing. I want everybody to support due process and habeas corpus and our Bill of Rights. And I want everybody to protest absolutely nonviolently. We've got to defend our democracy right now. This is the crucial time. And thanks for listening and thanks for calling, everyone.
Great show. Thanks, Matt.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.